On Wisconsin, right? Great to have Mike LaCroix with us. Mike always loved a big entrance, and the director of the UW-Madison Marching Band for 50 years was known for arriving at varsity band concerts at the Kohl Center, suspended from the air, and he talks about that, among many other things, in his brand new memoir. It's titled Moments of Happiness, A Wisconsin Band Story. The book's officially released tomorrow when he and his co-author Doug Moe appear together at 6 p.m. At the Madison Central Library. But we're getting a preview because he's with us again in the with me in the studio to talk about the book and about his life. And I hope you'll join the conversation. Have you enjoyed a fifth quarter celebration at a Badger football game? Were you a member of the UW marching band? Do you recognize moments of happiness as they are happening to you? I know Mike hopes that. I do too, for that matter. Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Mike LaCroix, welcome back.
Oh, it's always good to see you, Larry.
Oh, man, it's good to see you. And I really enjoyed reading your book. It's packed full of things I never knew.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. And I didn't reveal all the secrets, but I'm glad to hear there are things you didn't know about.
Oh, man, it's such a fun read. Maybe talk first, and you describe this in the book, but why did you title the book Moments of Happiness?
Well, it came from an experience I had that I was giving a talk at the Rose Bowl, the first one we went, and it so struck me that this was a moment in these kids' life that they needed to remember. And so I made the statement, I said, this is going to be a moment of happiness that you need to remember forever. And it'll help you get through some of those moments of unhappiness that will undoubtedly occur. And it sort of stuck. Some of the kids in the band picked up on it. That, you know, they'll say, well, that was a moment of happiness. And once it got in my mind and in their minds, I thought, this is too good a title to pass up.
Yeah, I would agree. And you wrote this with Doug Moe. And Doug's an old friend of mine. So he's a darn good writer.
Nobody better, as far as I'm concerned. He's really good.
I thought he really did a good job of capturing your voice.
Oh, well, I've had other people say that. I think that's great because that's what we wanted to do. I know many times we talked about how would I say it, and he did an awful lot of transcribing. I've got tons and tons of tape recordings that he listen to probably more than I did.
Well, one of the things I really liked about the book was there were a lot of stories about your childhood in Indiana and your dad, Harold LaCroix, also your high school band teacher, and what I found a lot of fun to hear about or read about was your performances way back when you started performing with your dad.
Yeah, we called it a vaudeville act. I probably just because it was a convenient title, but it started out because dad was a music teacher and he was always getting calls to do programs. And finally, one day he said, "Well, let's just do it together. I won't have to find another, won't have to find anybody else." And so we developed about a 45-minute show that had a lot of novelty things in it. He played multiple instruments. He was a great piano player, and then he had me do some novelty things, and it was great fun. And it taught me a lot about how to deal with an audience. Taught me a lot to how audience is going to react to certain things, because you probably know that the audiences react very differently. You can do exactly the same thing, and they'll completely be different in the way that they react to it.
Yeah, and you were a great trumpet player right from from a young, really young age.
I started I played in the high school band when I was in the sixth grade. And that was because Dad, I think, could see me getting bored with some of the normal grade school music. And he put me in the group, and I played continually for years, right up until about 20 years ago, I was still playing. But it's something that I love doing, and I hope it came across with Dad and everybody else.
I was amazed at some of the things you guys did together. And you went on, you studied at Butler University at Indianapolis, and here is something else I was kind of struck by. You wrote arrangements for the Butler Band while you were a student there.
That's right. They didn't have a regular arranger, so they were using a lot of different students to do it, music students. And I really can't recall whether I volunteered or was drafted. I don't remember which it was, but I probably volunteered because it's a tough job to write those recordings or write those records. And I got started on it, and then it just kept growing. So I not only was an undergraduate at Butler, but I went on to be a graduate student and then ultimately a faculty member, basically doing the same thing, writing arrangements and conducting a band.
And doing a lot of work on the side, too. You do all these side jobs.
Well, I got married very
young. Teenagers.
Yeah, well, we were that's right. We were teenagers. We had been, quote, going steady since we were in the seventh grade. And we decided to get married very early. And so consequently, I had to make a living. We had some kids. I had a daughter very young. We made do, and it was fun. You look back on times like that, as you know, and you say, how did we ever manage to get through it? But looking back on it was fun.
Yeah, it had to have been. Tell us the story. Robert Reynolds, and I think, was impactful here in your arrival and getting to Wisconsin.
Bob was the director of bands here when I came. He had succeeded Ray Dvorak, who was a legend as far as I'm concerned, a great, great guy. And Bob Reynolds, and he was looking for an assistant to do the marching band. And he called me one day, and we did meet for a short period of time when he was the director. And he said, well, you know, I'm not going to make a decision till I end the job a little bit longer. And I thought that was the kiss of death. I thought, he said, well, we don't think you're the one for the job. But then later he called me, and I did an interview, and he asked me the same day. He said, if we're going to offer you the job, would you accept it? And it took me about 30 seconds to say, maybe less than that, to say yes. It was a realization of a dream, actually, be a Big Ten band director.
Yeah, absolutely. A funny incident, and you may have told me, as mentioned this on the air before, but I thought your first visit with your wife.
First visit with Phyllis, we went down State Street at a time when the riots were still going on and all the things that was happening, and I took her to see State Street, and this was going to be her new home. And on driving home after the visit, I said, well, Phyllis, what do you think? And she burst into tears and didn't stop crying for about another half hour.
oh man. Well, what was it like when you first got here? How'd you establish that your presence with the band?
Well, it was a tough time because in those days, Wisconsin did not have a football team that was worth talking about too much. So Elroy Hirsch came in, and he sort of revitalized the spirit of the band. And fortunately, I came in the same year that Elroy came in. So I was able to sort of play on that spirit. And the big thing was getting people to come out for the band. The band had shrunk. The 3 years that I had not been there, it got down to about 90-some players, which is very small for a Big Ten band.
Yeah.
And we our biggest problem was to get people enthusiastic about it and follow the sort of the spirit that Elroy had had. And we started by trying to build up the numbers, and then a couple things happened that really worked well. The losing streak was finally over, and that happened during Elroy's time here. And once it was broken, then it seemed like things just fell into place, and there was a little more interest. The band itself wasn't used to working as hard at that point as I expected, and they were making odds on how long I would last, because I was pretty demanding on what they were doing at that time.
Well, and you were always pretty demanding. I mean, throughout your career, but I mean, they came to know what to expect.
They did, yeah. And like most times, once you get experience it, you enjoy it. You enjoy the idea of working this hard and producing results, and once that sort of gets established, then there's no turning back. And we just kept slowly, you know, chipping away at things that we thought we needed to do better, and the kids bought into it, which is very good for me.
We get an email, somebody wondering what to talk about that run in for a game.
Well, when I came, they called it the run on, and it originally was a run on. The band would get in the tunnel and run out, and there wasn't a lot of, I guess you'd say, discipline to it. There wasn't a lot of regularity to it, regulation. And so the first thing I did is I wanted to establish a pattern where when you see the band, you start to build anticipation. And I tried a couple things that didn't work and finally settled on what audiences still see today. I'm very proud of the fact
yeah.
that the run-on has stayed the same, but I wanted to see the tubas come out as sort of building a prelude to what happened. Then the drums come out, sort of build anticipation, and then we brought the band out at full step. Now, the difference was when I took over the run-on, they had to stay in step. They had to hit the ground together. They had to stay in line, and all those things that wasn't true in just the run-on that they were doing before. So it got more disciplined. But when you do that, it makes it harder.
Yeah, it does indeed. Mike LaCrone, our guest today. Mike's book is titled Moments of Happiness, A Wisconsin Band Story. It's great to have him with us. Questions, comments, or maybe an experience to share, I hope you'll join in. The number's 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you with us for WPR News, and great to have Mike LaCrone with us as well. Mike LaCrone served as the director of the band, the UW Marching Band, for 50 years before he retired in 2019. And he's co-author of this memoir titled Moments of Happiness, A Wisconsin Band Story, published this week by the University of Wisconsin Press. Questions, give a call, 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. You know, women were first allowed to join the UW Marching Band, I think it was it 74 or 75?
1974.
Yeah, what role did you play in ending the gender barrier?
Well, I'm very proud to say that I was one of the first, if not the first, Big Ten band director to say we need to open this to women. And the odd thing about it is we were the last Big Ten band to add women to the band, because once I opened it to it, the challenge of breaking that barrier of being able to be the first ones. There were lawsuits that would happen at different other Big Ten bands. And at that point, I was smart enough, one of the few times I've been smart enough, to say, you know, well, it's going to happen eventually anyhow, so we might as well take out the restriction. Once we took it out, the glamour of trying to be the first was lost. And so it took two women in 1974, Paula Schultz was her name, and Marianne Thurber. They broke that barrier, and I couldn't have handpicked two people that were better to do
yeah.
it. They were just the right temperament, the right attitude. The men in the band saw it, and they saw that they were not in it for any self glorification. They just wanted to be a part of the band, and they were just perfect for what happened.
Yeah, and I don't know what the percentage is between men and women in the band, but it, a lot of women in the band.
Well, one of the things that I've learned to say is when people ask me what the percentage was, my stock answer is, well, I don't know because it doesn't matter.
And
that's really true. It doesn't matter what the percentage is. And it's interesting to watch after all the years how women have taken over leadership roles, which at the beginning they just wanted to be a part of it. Now they're in some of those leadership roles, being drum majors, being head of the ranks and so forth. So that's been fun to watch happen.
Bill in Rice Lake, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Larry. Mike, I remember the band Standard during the basketball season in the early 70s was a play, Three Blind Mice. And then all of a sudden, never heard it again. I wonder if Mike could comment on that.
Thanks. Well, that was an accident. It happened during a game against Minnesota, and I'll say this without any fear of repercussions. The refereeing was terrible, and the band started playing Three Blind Mice because of the reaction, and John Paulus, who was the coach at that point, stood up on the bench, started conducting the rest of the band, and the referees, I think, were a little chagrined, but the funny thing was there was no technical foul. There was no other repercussions. But the fact that it sort of disappeared, I think, wasn't really a fright. And nobody said, don't play it anymore, Mike. But I think it just sort of died away because I don't think you could top that that one time when John Paulus and the entire Fieldhouse was playing and singing along with us as we played Three Blind Mice. It was appropriate.
Over the years, and actually there's some good story. You tell a good story about actually getting the band involved in other sports other than Badger football, basketball, and hockey.
Hockey was a big thing. Bob Johnson was very important in getting established that. He started pestering me very early on. You got to have a band at a hockey game. We need you. Because hockey was just getting started as a sport. And finally, I gave in. He said, well, just come one night. We play a two-night series. Come one night. And we did. And he came to me the next day and said, Mike, it's too popular. You got to keep coming every night because the fans that are coming on Friday night think you should be here both nights. So it just grew, and then we went into women's basketball.
Yeah.
Then we started playing for volleyball in those days, and then women's hockey. So it was one of those things. I'm very pleased with the fact that the demand, people felt like they wanted to have the band there, and that made me very pleased about it. Sometimes created problems because we started to spread ourselves pretty thin, but it worked.
Keith in Lake Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Keith.
Hello there, Larry and Mike. I want to ask Mike if you'd give a little more of a background on the Bud song and where that came from and how the crowds responded to it.
Yeah, and you've got some great stories in there about the Budweiser song, Mike.
Well, we started playing that about 1972 or... We had a group of fans in Section GG. I remember it very carefully at the old Coliseum. And every time we stopped playing, they would get together as a crowd and holler, "We want a polka! We want a polka!" And I'm from Indiana, so I didn't know much about polkas in those days. But finally, I had this tune called "You Said It All," which was a beer commercial. And I told the band, I said, well, if you change the percussion part a little bit here, if you change a little bit the attitude of it, it'll sound like a polka. They'll leave me alone. But the next game, we want a polka. We want a polka. So we started playing it on a regular basis. And then I noticed the crowd, when they got to the part about when you say ba, 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 they were using the name of the product. And I thought, well, that's not good. I'm doing advertising. So at one point, I had the band stand up, turn and face the crowd and say, when you say Wisconsin, you've said it all. And that took a while to catch on. It was sort of a battle back and forth between the crowd. And eventually, we won them over, and it became part of the traditions. We played it. We played it everywhere. The year that they won the national championship, it just went berserk how loud it was and how much people played it and sang it.
And Budweiser, actually, as you note in your book, they even did a kind of an ad that was a tribute to the band. And
they did. They did a commercial, a televised commercial that was not really working to sell their product. What they were trying to do is to pay a tribute to the band, which, again, one of those things that you just couldn't have planned for, but they just stepped up.
And Budweiser, I mean, they never paid you for it, but they did donate some money.
They contributed regularly both to the band fund and to the athletic department.
Yeah, so pretty cool. Karen emailed to say she was sad that she she couldn't be in the band because she played the flute and there were no flutes in the band in the 70s.
Well, that I didn't do anything about. Although you would be amazed, Larry, the number of flute players that were in the band playing other instruments. A lot of the women who were, they went to cymbal playing, which they were very natural at. A lot of the women learned to play another instrument very satisfactorily, and so they got in the band. So it didn't cut them out completely, but it did reduce the number of flute players that we were considering.
Well, I want to get this in, and we can go back to other parts. But I know you have kept going here. You may have retired, but you're not retired. You got podcasts. Talk about that.
Well, Four Seasons Theater, who I've done a lot of work with, Sarah Marty with Four Seasons Theater, she said, you should do a podcast based on the class that I used to teach at the university. It was called The Big Bands, and I did another class called Immortal Performers.
Yeah.
And she said, you need to just put that on a podcast. And I didn't know what a podcast was at that point, but she said, just talk for a half an hour. And it proved to be something that I got a kick out of doing because I got to just say the things that I had told my class during the years. And it was relatively easy for me to do it. Although, as I've said many times, I've learned that you better be accurate or you have listeners that are going to let you know about it if it's not.
And so that's called Listening with Lecro.
That's right. And we've done about a dozen of them so far, and we keep trying to release them every few weeks. We try to release another one, and I think we've got four or five in the can right now that we can release, which is, it's a lot of fun. And it's good for me to have to research some of these things.
Can't let you go without talking about your entrances for the big band. I can remember you bicycling across. Where were you? You were way the heck up in the air, yeah, on a bicycle. And you weren't even.
I wasn't safetied, as they say.
You weren't safetied.
No. We stretched a wire the length of the basketball court up above the audience, and
yeah,
we rigged it so we could ride it the length of the field. The problem was they safetied the bike, but they didn't safety me. I just had to climb on and hope that everything went well. But I did a lot of foolish things like that, but it was fun, and it made people want to come to the concert. It was nothing else. It was, well, what's the silly guy going to do next? And that was fun for me.
You even had to jump to a fire pole.
I did. That's the one thing I probably would not do again. I had to jump off of the third deck of the field house onto a fire pole and slide all the way down. And again, something like that, you can't safety at all. You just have to do it. And I did.
Well, I tell you what, is there anything you do differently?
You know, that's a really good question. I don't think I would, because there were so many things that you look back and you say, well, if I would have been smart enough to know to do that different, things would have turned out better. But things turned out so well for me. I mean, I really feel blessed in the way that everything had happened to me over the years. So I probably wouldn't do it, because it might change things that happen later.
Well, things have gone well, including this book, Moments of Happiness, A Wisconsin Band Story. Mike, it's been always been a pleasure. I hope this isn't our last time talking together.
I hope so, too. It's always been fun.
Mike Lecrone, his book again, Moments of Happiness, A Wisconsin Band Story, officially opens tomorrow, as a matter of fact. And great talking with him today. I wish we had more time, because there are so many stories in his book you would love to hear. Always great to have him with us, and great to have you listening in, and great to have the staff that we've got. Clara Neipert and Joel Patnaud, our producers, tech directors, Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins, and our executive director, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening, and stay with us. Lots in store.